Welcome back. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett. When we come back, more of my conversation with Preston Dennett, the author of Wondrous 25 True UFO Encounters, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Preston Dennett stays with us, and we'll start to take some calls here in a moment. Preston, is there ever a story, or is there one that sort of got away? In other words, someone related this story to you. It was an unbelievable tale, and that at the end they said, but I don't want it published.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that happens all the time. And it's, you know, frustrating. I've interviewed people for hours and days, and they're like, you know what? I don't want to have you tell my story. That does happen, certainly. Yeah, one guy from England told me an incredible story, and I contacted him some years later. And I'm like, how are you doing? And he's like, good, good, you know. And I'm just checking in, and he's like, you know, if you want to tell my story, I'm sorry, you know, I told you that you couldn't, but yeah, you're more than happy to now. So sometimes they will change their mind. But yeah, that's really not my main purpose for doing this. I'm not in it, you know, for the fame or the money or anything like that. I'm doing it because I think this is an important subject. And boy, when I found out UFOs were real, it bowled me over. I mean, it was hard for me. I'm still trying to come to terms with it. So I think...
How did it happen? How did it start for you?
I came in this field skeptical. Boy, I did not believe it for a second, but I remember it vividly. It was like November, I think the exact day was November 17, 1986, and there was a report on the news about a sighting over Alaska. Turned out Captain Kenju Taroshi was flying JAL Airlines, a commercial Japanese airliner, over Alaska, and was approached by two very large walnut-shaped objects, larger than his own jet airplane. It appeared on their onboard radar. It tracked their plane for many miles. They requested a course change. It still followed them. It was a complicated case. It's well known in the field. Back then, there was a lot of ridicule associated with this subject. It still is, but back then it was much worse. And the newscasters didn't say any of that. It was just sort of this jokey news story. And they laughed nervously and moved on. But I was kind of blown away that this pilot was willing to throw away his career. I thought he was crazy, but I remembered my brother had seen a UFO, and I asked him about it, and he told me an amazing story, and he had two people with him, two friends who I knew. I ended up calling them, and they verified the story. They all three chased a UFO down the Reseda Boulevard, and that's kind of how it all started to unravel for me. Found out my sister-in-law had had an encounter. She had witnesses to support her sighting. Several friends, one had missing time, brought it up at work. One lady and her friend and mother were chased by a UFO. They had missing time. Another lady I'd worked with for years and years. Their whole family had a sighting, and the daughter ended up having an encounter with gray aliens. I had a family member who saw grays face to face. So, yeah, it hit home for me, and it hit hard. I was not happy.
You were not happy. Interesting, because you used the word unravel. That's when it started to unravel. Does it still feel like it's unraveling?
A little bit. I mean, I mean, this really hit me like a ton of bricks. The world was being invaded by aliens, and I had no idea. And then to find out, you know, I was trying to disprove it, and what I found was the opposite. There was an enormous amount of evidence in support of this. And it was worse. There was a government cover-up. So, yeah, it unraveled. My whole worldview completely shifted. And it still is. I keep trying to get a handle on what's going on with the whole UFO situation. And it's very hard to. It continues to evolve. Even now, we're having all kinds of changes in the UFO field with, you know, disclosure. Contact continues to escalate. At some point, I think we will have open official contact. And I know how that must sound to a skeptic, but this is a phenomenon that is very real. I think the proof is in the public arena, and it's continuing to evolve. There's a very good chance this is going to be a very different world we live in, with full-on contact with extraterrestrials and humanity at large. That could happen.
So you have friends and family and acquaintances all around you having these experiences. What about for you personally?
happen. I wanted to see them myself. It wasn't enough to hear it from people I loved and trusted, and I knew they weren't lying. I started camping out in fields where these objects were being seen, and yeah, eventually I did have my own sightings, and I think largely it was because I was investigating it. I was targeted, and by that I mean I'm driving along one day, 1992, late July, through Woodland Hills after having stayed up most of the night talking about UFOs with my brother and sister-in-law, who were kind of helping me through this transition. He's the one who had a sighting. And I was just coming down this little tiny road, Ballandrina, it's called. It's a little tiny road in the suburbs of Woodland Hills, very densely populated there. And I saw what I thought was a bird coming down towards my car. Didn't make sense. This was late at night. I thought, well, maybe it's a firework. You know, it's late July, but it clearly wasn't. It was a little orb, a ball of light. This darn thing comes right in front of my windshield. No kidding, a foot away. Maybe 2 feet, but, you know, what's the difference? And it stops and goes back and forth and back and forth two, maybe three times, dips down a little bit and goes straight up. And I would also always tell people, yeah, that's my sighting and that's about it. But someone said, well, what happened next? I got a kind of blank look on my face, and I'm like, huh, you know, I don't know. I should have turned around. That's what I would have done if I was thinking clearly. I mean, I don't remember driving home. I don't remember what happened. I'm now seriously wondering if I had missing time. Honestly, yeah. And that was just the first sighting. I've had a good 6, 7, 8 really good sightings since then.
Have you ever undergone a regression?
No. No, I haven't. I'm certainly considering it. I've had some very close-up sightings. I mean, I'd once interviewed this lady who was having crazy encounters. I mean, just full-on hybrid babies, grays surrounding her bed. I mean, it just went on and on. I'm wondering, is she telling me the truth? I was transcribing the interview, and I got a really strong impulse that I could not resist to go onto the roof of my condo. This is in Canoga Park. Some years later, 3, 4 years later, and I get onto the roof. You're not allowed up there. You know, I don't go up there. I no longer live there, but have been up there a few times. But, you know, you're not allowed up on the roof. But I'm up there, and I'm thinking, what the heck? You know, what am I doing up here? This is ridiculous. You know, it's late at night, and a UFO appears. And it gave me a message. I am not kidding. It spoke to me telepathically. Not in so many words, just a very strong impression. And I have to tell you, I've never experienced anything like that. And
what was the message?
It said, we're real. I'll call her Wendy. It said, we're Wendy's ETs. You don't believe? Well, watch this. And this thing started darting around, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It was astounding, to say the least. I mean, my jaw dropped to the floor. I could not believe it. And this message was clear enough, I can tell you. I mean, it's hard to describe. It wasn't words, but it was a very clear impression. Like, you don't believe? Watch this. It's us. You know, who do you think? Yeah, it blew me away. I actually ran downstairs, and I'm not sure if I called her that night. It was pretty late, but certainly by the next day. I'm like, you're not going to believe what happened. She's like, I told you. And she ended up showing me UFOs on another occasion. So, the sightings started to stack up. And I still continue to have sightings every now and then. I think they know about me. Here's a weird thing that just happened, actually. I had a guy contact me from England, who said that the Greys came to him and said that you need to call Preston Dennett. And he didn't know who I was. He's like, who? Preston what? He told me this. I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, he's like, no, they told me to call you. I'm like, wow, okay.
Well, you're on the radar for sure. You're on the radar. So let's talk a little bit about this therapist who started to discover strange symbols on her body.
Yeah, this is one of the strangest cases I've ever heard. I've heard of people having, you know, scoop marks on their body, triangles even. But what happened to Linda is her name, is very unusual. She had had a couple of UFO sightings, but in 1983, she decided to go to a massage therapist. She herself saw a therapist due to some childhood abuse issues, and her therapist recommended that she see a massage therapist as it can help relieve trauma and bring up memories from that are suppressed. Linda is herself a therapist, a very good witness. Her therapy worked so well, she became a therapist herself. But at any rate, that's just an aside. She went to see this massage therapist, and something very strange happened following these sessions. She would go to the shower or be getting ready for bed and notice these marks on her leg or on her body. It was usually her leg. And it looked like almost hieroglyphics. She does suffer from a condition known as dermographia. This is a lot of histamine in her skin, and she welts up easily. But these were very meaningful, intelligently designed marks that could not be accidentally made. And after it kept happening, she started to write them down in a little notebook and research them, because she could not interpret them. And it wasn't Sanskrit. She went to books on symbology, nothing there. She went to the Healing Light Center. She talked to psychics. She went to a Masonic temple. She went all over the place looking to find out what these symbols could possibly mean, and just came up with a complete dead end. No one knew what they could possibly mean. But they were clearly meaningful. I mean, these were good, solid, letter-like or hieroglyphic-like marks. And finally it stopped happening. She put the notebook away, and it was some years later she got the answer, and boy, was it a shock. She had actually sat down to watch television with her boyfriend, and there was a little mini-series on TV. It was called Intruders, and it is based on Bud Hopkins' research. His book, actually, by the same name, Intruders, involving people who've been taken on board. And she's watching this film, thinking, you know, it's just an interesting movie about UFOs, true life. And there's a segment on there where people are taken on board a craft, and there were symbols on the wall of this craft. What she didn't know is that these symbols were valid. These were actually true symbols taken from other people's firsthand accounts. And she's looking at them, and her jaw drops, her eyes go wide, she feels chills going up and down her spine, and her boyfriend turns to her and says, "Hey, honey, isn't that what kept appearing on your body? That looks just like what you had appearing on your legs." She's like, "Yeah, that's exactly it." So she finally got her answer. These were alien symbols appearing on her body.
Did she have photographs of these symbols that appeared on her body?
I didn't see them. I wasn't able to get to see the notebooks. This happened many years ago. I was quite a young researcher at the time, and I regret it now. But she says they look exactly like the symbols that appeared on that television miniseries, Intruders, which I did look up. I saw the symbols. And she says, following this, she started to have a lot of childhood memories come resurfacing of UFOs over her childhood home. And one really interesting memory was standing out in the field with these tall, human-like ETs dressed in sort of jumpsuits, and she's in sort of this beam of light, and she's watching the landscape around her go back in time, very much like H.G. Wells' Time Machine. It's going back seasons and years, and the landscape is changing. She kept wanting to run out and touch stuff, and I'll call it an ET. That's what she believes it was. Kept telling her, no, stay here. Don't move. It's too dangerous. Just stay here and watch this. And she had another very similar dream in which this beam of light was coming down, and she called it the time beam. So there is, I've never heard that term before. I've certainly heard of weird time anomalies where time seems to stop, or time can, just weird time anomalies involved with UFO encounters. Like a person will be taken and spend an hour or two aboard a craft, and they come back and it's just minutes later. All kinds of weird time compression, time telescoping, and that seems to be sort of what's going on in this case. It's a very bizarre case.
These symbols, did she draw them? Did she put them down? Did you see any of them?
No, I didn't. She described them to me, though. And she also said that another curious thing, that when she opened her notebook, there weren't just symbols there. She was also drawing pictures, which she didn't make any sense of at the time. But looking back, she now thinks that they were UFOs. She kept drawing this plane, but it wasn't right. And she would chop off the cockpit and the tail section and the wings, and she'd be left with sort of this fuselage. She put a little dome on top. It was sort of your classic UFO. She was also drawing weird medical-like instruments, rods with little balls on top, and sort of hypodermic syringes type things, and just weird instruments. She wonders if that's related. I think it probably is. This is all stuff that just started surfacing. So, it's a bizarre case, for sure. And I have talked to other people who've had weird symbols appear on their body, but they're usually simple, a triangle, maybe some puncture wounds in sort of a hexagonal shape or something along those lines, but never like a complicated hieroglyphic-type symbol.
Any thoughts as to why the ETs would place these symbols on someone?
Yeah, I do wonder about that. I think it's a calling card. I think it's something that they do on purpose to let a person know that something is going on with them, because often there's no reason for it. I interviewed another gentleman, same thing. He had a little triangle mark on the inside of his elbow. Sometimes I think it could be just a result of medical instrumentation, but it doesn't seem like that's what's going on in her case. I don't know. I mean, scoop marks, that's one thing. Bruises, puncture wounds, I've heard these sort of things. But occasionally they will leave this meaningful triangular mark or something along those lines. And this was the most complicated symbol case, I would call it, that I'd ever run across.
All right. When we come back, we'll take some calls. We'll also talk about a construction worker who took an assignment at Edwards Air Force Base and made the mistake of looking into a secret hangar and seeing something he wasn't supposed to. Great here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. The family who live in the real-life house on which The Conjuring was based claim to have seen ghosts there. Immortalized by the 2013 supernatural horror movie The Conjuring, this remote Rhode Island farmhouse was the scene of a notorious real-life haunting that plagued the Perrin family for years. The story goes that a witch had cursed the property, dooming anyone who lived there. The Perrins experienced all manner of unexplained occurrences, which reportedly became increasingly sinister and threatening as time went on. These days, the house is owned by a Madison Heinzen and her family, who moved to the property back in 2019. It doesn't appear as though the activity at the house has settled down, however. Madison, in particular, has had sightings of what have been described as a woman in a wedding dress. You can read more in the news section at coasttocoastam.com. Back with your questions and comments for Preston Dennett when Coast to Coast continues. Stay with us. Preston Dennett, the author of Wondrous, 25 True UFO Encounters. Let's dive into the calls on the wildcard line. Ed is in Sierra Madre, California. Ed, go ahead. Welcome.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Richard. Perhaps Preston can help me here unravel some of my own questions. Concerning the lady and the, I think you call it, missing embryo, was there any indication that, there was an intervention involved, a surgical or otherwise, or some kind of uterine intervention to remove this embryo?
Good question.
Yeah, yes. They did actually check. They found no real marks on her body other than she did have some puncture wounds on the instep of her sole. Well, she could not figure out how that happened. This wasn't painful. These were just three marks on the bottom of her foot. Around that time, which wouldn't seem to have anything to do with her pregnancy, but no, she had no indication of how this baby went missing. No memories, no bruises, no markings of any kind. So it's a bit of a mystery, but that is not unusual. Sometimes these cases do happen without any obvious signs of medical intervention.
Ed, thank you for that. Also on the wild card line, Daniel's in Arkansas. Daniel, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Hello, Richard. I had a question. I've just moved my phone over from speakerphone to plain phone, are you there?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, gosh. Okay, now I'm not hearing you. I barely could hear anything. I'm sorry. I guess I'll just talk.
Yeah, go ahead. We can hear you. Okay. Just state your question or your comment.
I can. Yes, and I can barely hear you. I have this only $1,000 phone that doesn't freaking work. I guess we all know how that works. Okay, Richard, I'm sorry. The question is, has your guest ever run across an experiencer who had an encounter with a being that they thought was extremely old and had a very compassionate interaction with this being, which was of a non-sexual nature, but was extremely, it involved a lot of physical contact. I don't want to really describe it very much, but I, in the literature from 30 years ago, when I investigated all this, I never read anything about a person who had extreme physical contact with a creature. It was very, very compassionate and very old, and which even involved bringing me to tears. It was such a compassionate encounter. The second thing was, have you run across anybody who there was something about the skull or the brain of the other being? This is a different being, which I don't want to describe, but something very unusual about the skull or the brain of this other being. So the two questions.
All right. Preston, do any of those things sound familiar?
Yeah, I have heard things like this. Perhaps not all involved with the same incident, but certainly people have described very old beings. One gentleman, a car mechanic, described seeing a gray who he felt was very, very old. That was just his impression. I have talked to contactees who've asked about this and have seen what we would call, I guess, elderly grays, and was told that they live a couple of hundred years, 300 years perhaps. The exact number wasn't given. So that certainly does turn up. Some people do have very physical encounters where the grays will touch them, hold their hands, place their hands on their chest, even hug them. Often they will place their forehead against the person's forehead. And this can be very benevolent. I've had people describe that these contacts were the most loving experience they've ever felt, even from another human being, even from a spouse. Absolutely a truly loving, compassionate encounter. That does turn up. So I can't say I've had an old, compassionate alien encounter in my own personal files, but those separate elements do turn up. And as far as skull shape, you hear all kinds of variations. Often it's your standard sort of large oval-shaped, egg-shaped head, but people will describe a number of variations. One I've heard is sort of a, gosh, how would I describe this? The lobes of the brain being almost not visible, but sort of a skull that has two sections to it, perhaps like a heart-shaped, that sort of thing. Different skull shapes do turn up. Sometimes it's misshapen. But generally speaking, no, it's your typical sort of egg-shaped head or sort of pointy chins and sweeping outward to have a very large forehead type thing. But it depends on the entity. That's grays that I'm talking about there. Praying mantis are often described as having a more triangular-shaped head with very large eyes, sometimes as large as a person's head even, depending on the size of the praying mantis. So, I mean, you get a lot of different variations in how people describe ETs.
All right, Daniel, thank you for that. I want to ask you about this construction worker who was on assignment at Edwards Air Force Base when he was poking around and saw something in a secret hangar he shouldn't have.
Yes, this is a very interesting whistleblower account, I would call it. I have been contacted by a number of whistleblowers, and include a few in this latest book. This gentleman contacted me from the hospital, actually. He was on his, I hate to say it, deathbed, but he was suffering from a chronic illness and not expected to recover, and wanted to do his part for disclosure and described this very interesting experience which he had in the late 1980s at Edwards Air Force Base, where he worked as a subcontractor and was on site at Edwards Air Force Base with his employer walking by a hangar and heard a deep, deep thrumming noise. Well, there was a window open in his hangar, and he couldn't help but turn and look. His arms were tingling. The hair was going up on his head. He turns and looks through this partially open viewport, is what he called it, and he witnessed a craft, and it was floating. It was very small, maybe the size of a small Honda Accord, is how he described it, actually. It was hooked up to instrument cables, but did appear to be floating there. And otherwise totally silent, except for this deep thrumming noise, he turns to his employer and says, "What the heck is that?" And his employer jams his index finger to his lips and says, "You know, shush. You know," basically gestures him to be quiet and looked very nervous about it. And after they left the scene, he asked, "What was that? What was that?" His employer would not say a word and didn't for over a year until this same employer called him back, asking him to come back and do another job. And the guy I went and interviewed said, "No, I'm not doing it. I'm not doing it unless you tell me what we saw." And they got into a kind of a contest about this. And after having a few beers, he convinced this guy to spill the beans. And what he told him was that this was not a UFO. This was not an alien spacecraft. But what this was reverse engineered from extraterrestrial technology. He said it was part of the so-called Star Wars program. And what this craft used was rotating magnetic fields that were directed in such a way that it caused a hole or a sort of a void to be projected in the desired direction of travel. And this thing was able to, you know, basically travel using this magnetic field and not fossil fuels. He actually mentioned Tesla Tech, that was part of this, and that they were making these things. And there was more than one of them. So it was a very interesting case involving what appears to be reverse engineering going on at Edwards Air Force Base. And there are other whistleblower accounts coming out of the same area. So I found that very compelling.
Sounds like another sort of Bob Lazar type situation. Did you do an investigation to verify this person had indeed worked at Edwards Air Force Base?
I was not able to verify it in his case. I was with the two other whistleblower accounts in this particular book, but not with his. He did not want his real name used. He gave me a rather short interview and was very nervous about it. but really, really wanted his story to be told and felt it was important.
All right, let's say hi to Ed in Wilkesboro, Pennsylvania. Ed, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I have my girlfriend, this girl I used to date, we were very, very close. She was having like some really bad dreams about abductions, UFOs, and so forth. One morning she woke up, she had a very prominent, look, about two and a half inches long, healed surgical scar inside of her right forearm. It looked like something that it was, somebody had operated on. It was like a 10-year-old scar. And we couldn't figure it out. And she, you know, she was kind of nonplussed about it. But 2 days later, the scar was totally gone. And I understand that there's some situation where there's transitory scars, and related with these UFO abductions. Could you comment on that, please?
Yeah, this is something that's fairly frequent, particularly when someone has an onboard encounter. They will come back with scars that are already healed up. I think what this is involving is often the placing of an implant in a person. I can't say for sure, but this is certainly something that does turn up, and a number of people have gone and had x-rays or MRIs or gone to the doctor for another reason, and there's the presence of some, what they would call a foreign body in their arm, sometimes metallic, sometimes not, but this is definitely something I do hear quite often. I would say that most people, the majority, who describe, you know, close encounters, being taken on board, missing time, do have incidents like this taking place. And that's usually, I think, what it is. It's involving some sort of, I mean, it could involve a healing operation or something along those lines. But often it does seem to involve the placing of an implant.
All right, Ed, thank you for that. I think we've got time for maybe one, maybe two stories, but I want to ask about this trip to the dentist. Teenage son and his mother are baffled to see that his dental x-rays show what appears to be an implant in his jaw.
Yes, this is a good case involving actual physical evidence. This lady from Indiana contacted me. So they'd gone to the dentist, and lo and behold, x-rays showed what looked like a BB under a back molar. This is what the dentist thought. He's like, did you shoot yourself in the mouth with a BB? Which her son, 14 years old, denied. She said, no, that never happened. And pointed to the x-rays and says, well, what the heck is this? And she says she has no idea. She kind of joked, well, maybe it's an alien implant. But she was just joking. They didn't laugh. Turns out the previous dental x-rays also showed this, but the dentist didn't tell her. And I asked them, you know, do you have any history of UFO encounters? She denied it. She said, no, you know, I had a few alien dreams. That's about it. And I don't think my son has ever seen a UFO. I'm like, well, ask him, you know, is he there? And he was, you know, as she was on the phone with me, she turns to him and asks him. And he said, well, yeah, Mom, you know, I didn't want to tell you, but, yeah, me and my friend were walking outside, and these lights came swooping down at us and started flashing these colored lights at us, and it wasn't a plane. It was totally silent. It freaked us out, and we went running home. And he doesn't remember having missing time or anything, but they had gone to the dentist previously, and there was no nothing on their x-rays. And they went back after this, and it was still there. And they sent me the x-rays. They do appear in the book. I sent them to a medical professional, too, an emergency physician and a medical doctor. Both said the same thing. They said, well, did they shoot himself in the mouth with a BB gun? I'm like, well, no. There's no entry wound. The tooth is fine. There's no foreign body reaction. What do you think this is? I said, well, it's clearly a foreign body, and it's opaque to x-rays, so it's got to be metallic. It's perfectly round. It's actually significantly larger than a BB. Not quite marble size, but it's directly under the molar. Very unusual. And it was this is a case that unfolded, you know, in real time. Often it takes years for people to find me, and their story is already over. But she called me up one day, and she says, you're not going to believe what happened last night. the grays came in. The son has a lot of trouble sleeping. I think it's partly related to what's going on. And he had come to sleep with her in her bedroom. And that night, the grays came. She woke up, could barely move, struggled to wake up, opened her eyes and saw grays huddling around her son. There was one by the doorway. She said it barely came up to the doorknob, just past the doorknob, very short, looked right at her. They locked gazes, and it told her telepathically, everything's fine. You don't need to worry. Everything's going to be okay. Everything's fine. Over and over and over again. She was just obsessed about this.
Preston, we're just about out of time. Did he have the implant removed?
No. No, he did have to have his wisdom tooth removed, and the dentist, the oral surgeon, offered, and he said, no, no, I don't want it removed. He's very psychic, by the way, has all kinds of intuition and synchronicities and clairvoyance and precognition, which I think is related to this. This is something I see quite often, and she ended up having another encounter with a praying mantis, ET, later on, and did sort of disclose that she does have some history of strange events.
All right, Preston. Wondrous, 25 true UFO encounters. Great job. The book available at Amazon, of course. And we'll talk again sometime soon, I hope.
I hope. Thanks very much.
Preston Dennett. For George Norrie, George Knapp, Lisa Lyons, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Michael Cozio, Donna Walker, and Chris Burrows. I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices, your beautiful voices. Until next time, so long for now.